what the heck is a silent meditation retreat? What do you actually do there? Are you silent the entire time? Why on earth would you choose to do something like this? What about it was really difficult? What about it was really blissful? Did any surprising things come up? These are the exact things I'm going to talk about today because it is such a profound experience. This is Heart of the Story, and I'm Nadine Kenny Johnstone. I'm an author and a holistic writing coach who talks with today's top women writers about how to navigate life when things don't go according to plan. These impactful conversations and personal reflections invite you to be seen, feel supported, and ultimately fall back in love with yourself. So let's go together to that honest, powerful place, the heart of the story. Hi, friends. Well, I just had a wild experience. I returned back home from a 5-day silent meditation retreat, and I have lots to share about it. It was really interesting when I got back and I was just mentioning in passing to friends and, you know, my son's teachers and whatnot that I had gone on this meditation retreat. Every single person had the same questions, and I found myself really excited to talk about all of those curiosities and really, really share what my experience was like. So aside from the basic questions I just mentioned about the experience itself, people also really wanted to know, what was it like when you were finished? And what was it like returning home? And what was the wisdom that you gained from it? And what are you still taking with you back in your real life? And what overall have been the major takeaways from your time there? And I'm going to answer all those questions, my friends. So without further ado, let's dive into what it was like to renounce speaking and electronics for 5 days straight. The very first thing that I want to lay out is, what is this kind of retreat, so that you can really get a sense of what it was that I was even agreeing to. There are many different kinds of silent retreats depending on the venue that's hosting it, if there is a spiritual component or not, and there are various lengths of silent retreats. The particular one that I did was a Vipassana style, and Vipassana really is focused on seeing things as they really are. So you're doing quite a bit of sitting and walking meditation, with the goal of first just concentrating on some kind of anchor, like the breath, and then having self-observation to notice what's happening in the body, but also what thoughts and emotions are arising, and noticing them and being aware of them, but also understanding the impermanence that they will pass and letting them pass. And not attaching or reacting, but instead making space and maybe even having curiosity if need be about what's happening, and then having some deep self-compassion if need be for whatever might come up. And there's really a sense of kind of non-reaction in terms of no need to be self-critical or judgmental about whatever may be coming up, but again, just returning back to your anchor. So that's the kind of meditation that we are practicing. And I will preface all of this by saying I am no Buddhist scholar, and the venue that I was at had a Buddhist focus to it. And this is only my second silent meditation retreat. I did a third kind of one years ago that was a hybrid. It was silent for part of the day, and then we spoke later on, and it was Natalie Goldberg's Sit, Walk, Write retreat. So it was kind of like creative and meditative, but this was truly only my second fully silent 5-day meditation. So I am a newbie, rookie, and when I throw out different terms, I don't have a whole knowledge base behind them. But you'll get the idea just from that description of the kind of meditation that we were going to be focusing on. When I signed up for this, I knew that I would be going to a retreat campus and being in full silence for 5 days straight, all meals, all interactions, everything in silence, that I would be renouncing technology. There's even a renunciation ceremony at the beginning where if you would like, you can turn in your cell phone and you get it back 5 days later. I knew that I would also be agreeing to doing a work meditation in which you do a sort of chore on campus once a day, every day, and that my schedule would look something like this. I would be woken up at 5:50 by someone ringing a bell, and then I and the almost 100 other people attending the retreat, people of all genders, ages, backgrounds, etc., would be walking in the dark cold of the early dawn to the meditation building. And here's how it would go for the rest of the day. We would sit and meditate for about 40 minutes at around 6:20 in the morning. We'd have breakfast at 7. There would be some free time after that. That's usually when I would go for a hike. And then it would be sitting meditation, walking meditation, sitting meditation, walking meditation, on and on until around 12:30 for lunch. And then there would be a little bit of free time again where a lot of people would either do some movement or they would do their work meditation. And then again, there would be sitting, walking, sitting, walking, sitting, walking until dinner at around 5:30. And then after that, there would be a little bit of sitting and walking and a Dharma talk at around 7:40 at night. And that is where one of the teachers gives some deep wisdom from Buddhist teachings, but also shares their own personal experience and some kind of inspiration in some ways of like just helping us work through wherever we might be at in our practice and challenges we might be facing. And then there would be some walking, and then there would be a final sitting and chanting session. And then 9:30, everybody would go back to the dorms and get ready for bed. And most people were asleep, I would imagine, by around 10:30. And then we would get up and do that all over again the very next day. All the meals were held in a dining hall. Also, we eat in silence. We get our food in silence. We clear our plates in silence. And even when we're doing a work meditation, we're just using like gestures and facial expressions. Then towards the middle of the week, there's usually a meeting with a group of about, I would say about 6-7 other meditators and then one of the teachers. And that's when you are allowed to speak. You meet for about an hour together and each person talks about what challenge or experience they might be facing at that particular time of the retreat. And then the teacher would give some input. That is really the only time of speaking. Often the fourth or so day of the retreat, there is an opportunity to meet one-on-one with the teacher for about 10 minutes. So that's what I was signing up for. And it's really, really funny because when I said it out loud to someone before I went, I was like, this seems ridiculous. I was like, basically, I signed up to go take a flight to go to a somewhat remote campus where you're on campus the whole time and you are completely quiet and you can't use technology and you meditate sitting for almost 6 hours a day and then You're also supposed to like walk, meditate for almost the same amount of time. And also I have to do chores. And I'm sleeping in a very sparse dorm room with basically just a twin bed and a sink. And I'm not in communication with my family. And yeah. It's like, what? Why on earth? Okay, so now that you get the lay of the land, let's talk about that. Why the heck would anybody do this and pay to do it? And why would I have returned after already doing it once last January? So why did I go this year? First and foremost, I find regular life really, really overstimulating. Even from a sensory perspective, I crave absolute silence. And often whenever I am traveling on my own, if I'm in a hotel room or some kind of space, I never once turn on the TV. I usually just read quietly in the room, and it is a delight. And so I find regular life with all of the noises and the dings and notifications of emails and messages and just so inundating, even if those things are good and might be like connecting you with your loved ones or with information that's really helpful or inspiring or what have you. I just find the constant onslaught of electronics and pressure and responsibility and noises and chaos really overwhelming. Even at dinner, Jamie loves to play music while we eat, and he can see, I mean, he knows me so well at this point, 20 years together, but I get like twitchy when it is anywhere above a whisper, this background music. It feels like nails on a chalkboard in my brain, and I'm like, oh my God, I cannot even think a thought or say a thing because all I can hear is this like constant noise. So basically, I'm a ton of fun to be around. But what's so interesting is that like when he's playing the music, then after dinner, when we're not really talking, we're like cleaning up, you know, we're not having some like powerful conversation and I start dancing. I love the music being loud then, but not while I'm also trying to have a conversation. Basically, I cannot multitask at all whatsoever. So I was looking forward to some sensory calmness. I was also really looking forward to getting grounded and centered after the chaos of the holidays. I always feel with all three of us being off of work and school for a couple of weeks and having lots of joyous time, but lots and lots and lots of together time and doing this and doing that and this kind of holiday celebration and that sort of a thing. I feel, I don't know if frazzled is the right word, but it's kind of scattered all over the place. And it's like I'm trying to get the pieces of myself and put them back together and bring them into myself. It's like I'm retrieving them and I'm bringing them back into my own being. So I was looking forward to centeredness, groundedness. I go in spurts where I have a really consistent meditation practice, and then I'll go for a time without being totally consistent. And oftentimes something like this really like kicks off a consistent practice. So I hoped it would be a pattern interrupter that would help me establish those rhythms again. I was really, really wanting to get clarity. I am currently in the midst of a lot of murky middles in my life where I am just in the in-between. For example, we are currently renting the home that we're in. And like every single year when it's time to figure out whether or not to renew the lease, it's kind of how I feel like when it's tax season again. I'm like, already? I was in already April. It's like it's so, it goes by so quick, and we always have like some grand plans that we're going to, you know, find the perfect house and purchase it. But we're just in this in-between space where we don't know if we want to fully root down by buying something and make great sacrifices of our savings and everything else in order to put down a down payment, but also we're throwing money away as we rent. On and on it goes. So we've been in the to rent or to buy cycle for several years now since moving to Florida, and we are still no clearer about what to do next than we were before. So that was in the back of my brain. I always, at the beginning of the year, like to get a lot of clarity about things I want to do with this podcast and offerings I want to provide in my Write Well Women's Writing community, what kind of workshops I want to offer, what kind of retreats I want to host. So I always, at the beginning of the year, I'm really craving clarity. I was craving clarity around stuff with Geo and schooling and things that are going well, and then other things that he really needs support with. And so just wanting to get a ton of clarity as a parent, as a partner, as a person, as a professional, as a still kind of new resident to Florida, but you know, we've been here 4 years now, and I think part of me is delighted by the communities of support that we've made here, and then the other part doesn't still even feel totally rooted, even though it has been a few years, and so feeling in between there. There was a lot I was really just figuring I would solve and figure out over the course of the 5 days. I was like, well, I'm going to have quite a bit of time in my brain, so I'm going to figure everything out. That was my goal, not a lofty expectation whatsoever. Okay, so that lays the groundwork for what I was hoping for. And I always teach this in my writing workshops, but oftentimes tension for characters in a story comes when the reality does not meet the expectations. They don't match. You can see where this is going, right? So you have to remember that I'm also, as I'm arriving there, kind of comparing it to the previous experience I had last January, where I went to the same place and it was my first time ever. And I arrived on this like beautiful sunny day, and I arrived early, and I had just been kind of in a social situation right before then. So I was like delighted by all of the silence. And I kind of forgot in hindsight about how hard it all is. And I only remembered the blissful moments, like, oh my God, remember when I ate my meals so slowly and meditatively, and I could taste the rosemary in that dish, and I could taste the homemade ricotta of that lunch, and oh, my face was tilted up towards the sun as I was eating every little morsel and tasting it and chewing it, and I was so present and I was so blissful. Totally unmatchable expectations in my mind. This year, instead of flying into San Francisco airport, I flew into Oakland. I've never been to that airport, and it was downpouring. They were experiencing record-breaking rains. And then I was calling and texting my shuttle, and no one was picking up my ride. Finally, as I was starting to panic, because I was like, how am I going to get to the retreat center, which is an hour away? I finally got a message. I went to the shuttle van. I was the only one. And when I got inside, it smelled like either stale urine or stale beer throughout the whole thing. And I was like, ugh. And then as we were driving, traffic was really wild, and the rain was coming down, and I was starting to get motion sick, and also I was frantically trying to answer all the emails and messages I needed to before my phone was officially going to be shut off. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be around any sort of technology for 5 days. So I have to like tell all the people and answer all the kind of dangling things that are left open right now. And so I was like texting and emailing, and whenever I do that in a moving vehicle, I always get a headache. So by the time I arrived on campus, I was like nauseous and headachy. And I arrived within the last couple minutes of the registration window. And so I was one of the last to arrive on campus. It was downpouring, and I'm trying to like drag my bag and myself from building to building. I'm like, okay, just get settled. And then as I checked in, that's usually when you get your work meditation, where you are assigned a chore. But when I went last year, I was able to choose because I was one of the first to arrive on campus. And so I had a choice of different sorts of chores that I could do. Well, since I was the last to arrive, I didn't have many choices. And when I sat down, the woman was like, would you like toilets or showers? And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. In my mind, cleaning public toilets and cleaning public showers are the two worst sort of chores you could possibly get. And so I was like, are there any other options? And she was like, no. Thank you so much for being flexible and accommodating. This is what she said before I had even chosen. And I was like, I'm not being flexible and accommodating. I don't want to do either of these. And in my head right away, I was like, I am paying to be here. Shouldn't I have a choice about this and whether or not to do it at all? But again, it's the whole point. And actually last year, the work meditation was one of my favorite parts about the whole thing, because anytime I would go anywhere on campus and it was clean, I knew it was because one of the other retreat participants had done their job and we were all chipping in. And there was this reciprocity and this understanding that like, oh, if that person doesn't do their job, then the dishes don't get cleaned. And if that other person doesn't do their job, then the floor in the dining hall is really dirty and messy and could attract some little critters. And you want to do your job for other people so that they'll have a good clean space, just as you want to have a good clean space. So I was a sweeper last year. I was in charge of sweeping the dining room with a team of other people. And it felt really meditative, stacking the chairs, sweeping, pushing the broom. And it was something that you could see the clear progress of, like, ooh, it started off very dirty and now it is clean. So yeah, this kind of got me off to the wrong start where I was like, oh God, I really don't want to do this at all. And yeah, I mean, cleaning my own toilet and shower is like one of the chores that I push off and procrastinate on. So imagine how it would be to clean like other people's DNA. No thanks. I chose showers instead of toilets. And I was like, okay, let's just move on. So the dorm rooms are very sparse but clean, and I actually like them. They're just kind of a little nook. You have a bed, a nightstand, and a sink. And sometimes, depending on how you've registered, you either choose that you will be partnered with a stranger and share a room, or you will have your own room. I definitely requested to have my own room because that would have been a deal breaker for me. I know we're alone the entire time, but then to like go back to a dorm room and then have to like silently navigate around space and things with a total random stranger sleeping a foot away from you, like, no, thank you. So went to my room, put the sheets and stuff on the bed, took out my suitcase and what have you. And then it was time for dinner. And we were able to talk that very first meal. You're able to meet the people around you, say hello, get to know each other for about a half an hour. And then there's an orientation where one of the staff just kind of walks you through the rules of the week and what to expect. And then from there, when you go into your first meditation, from then on, it is total silence. So I met a couple of nice people. It kind of turned things around a little bit. And then it was time to go sit. And I was like, okay, bring on the bliss. So you're in this meditation hall with maybe 100 people, I would say. And everyone has kind of a maroon mat, maybe, I don't know, 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet, something like that. And then on top of that, you can either put a zafu, like a cushion to sit on, or a kneeling bench. The kneeling bench is kind of like a bench that you kneel down on the ground and the bench goes under your bum. So you have something to sit on. Or like a little floor seat with a little backrest. And then we all meditate. My friends, I was so ping-pongy in my brain. My thoughts were all over the place. I was flooded with thoughts when I first arrived. I was just doing a ton of future thinking. Oh, I got to do this, got to do that. When I get back, I need to do this, got to figure this out. A lot of task mastering. I was even noticing judgments like, oh, look at that guy in front of me. He's making so much noise. He's not sitting still. That guy is sneezing and coughing. Like, why is he here if he's sick? And just on and on. And then I was like, self-critical about the criticism. I was like, oh, look at you, judgy. What are you doing? And then I was critical about the fact that I couldn't settle my brain. So I was like, you need to be doing this. And then I was like, why am I even here? I really could have used this week to like get stuff done and catch up on everything I missed during the holiday time off. I need to like get this done for work and this done for the podcast and this done for our home lives. And like, oh my gosh, why did I decide to come? All we're doing is coming back to our breath. I need to figure things out. And they keep saying, come back to your breath, come back to your anchor, notice and let it pass. I'm like, no, no, some of these thoughts I do need to go down a wild ride of because I need to figure out the solution for. And so I was like, oh goodness. It was very, very frantic at the beginning. And then on top of that, I was just trying to find the most comfortable position. So it was like one session I was sitting on the zafu, the next one I was kneeling, the next one I was sitting, but I kept being really uncomfortable because my right hip has been giving me some trouble. I think it's just from my years of running. I think something has happened to it just over time. And sometimes it just gets achy and uncomfortable, especially if I have been traveling for hours and sitting in an airplane chair. And that's what I had been doing. So restless, frantic, ping-pongy brain, my goodness. On top of that, there was even like this level of boredom, like, oh my gosh, I only remembered the bliss from last time. I forgot that like sometimes it's just really boring to come back to the breath. Or if you're doing walking meditation, heel, arch, ball, toe, heel, arch, ball, toe, heel, arch, ball, toe. I mean, I don't think I've experienced boredom since my son was born. There is not even a moment in the day to feel bored, really, because life is so busy that, only when I've been like meditating have I noticed this like boredom. So I was like, oh, there's boredom. After I got through kind of all this busyness and then a little bit of boredom, what I noticed the next day during my different sessions is that I was nodding off. You know, when you do that thing where you're like sitting and then your head like bobs forward and like jerks you awake, that was happening regularly during my sits. And I think it was really, truly just my body going from frantic to, oh my gosh, I actually have time and space to relax. Like, oh, and then it was like narcolepsy. It's just like, I'm out. And then one of the teachers kind of talked about that you need to have a balance of tranquility and energy when you're meditating, like relaxed alertness. And when you have too much tranquility or relaxation, then you don't have enough alertness or energy. And so you need to position yourself differently. Sometimes you just do a standing meditation to give your body a little bit of like alertness and energy. So then I started doing that where I would stand from time to time or be in a position that wasn't overly comfortable so as to keep me alert enough. So I went through that iteration. All this is happening. And then I'm also going on hikes in my free time. And there are, I don't know if they're just giant hills or technically mountains, but around the campus, there are these hill mountains. I'm from Chicago. It's all flat there. I don't know the distinction, but there is a lot of elevation. And I would climb them every morning and then a little bit after lunch. And I would try to give myself the task of noticing. I've talked on this podcast for years, and I've written about in my guided journal, Come Home to Your Heart, how meditative noticing walks are for me. I named them noticing walks when I started doing them, but I'm sure they were already a thing. I give my brain the job of just noticing the sensory details around me so that I'm not lost in thought. So as I was hiking, I would be like, noticing that red leaf, noticing that blade of grass, noticing the wind on my neck, noticing the sun on my cheek, noticing my shadow on the hill. And you're just so present. So I was doing that. And of course, inevitably, other thoughts would come up. And I kept on battling between, like, I really need this time and space to mull over and make decisions about some things. But I know what they're teaching us is that it's all about being present, coming back to the present moment and what's happening in the body, what's happening around you. And so I felt very torn between what I would allow for myself and what I wouldn't. And so a couple times on a hike, I would say to myself, okay, on the climb up, which would take about 30, 40 minutes, I'm going to do my noticing meditative walk. And then on the walk down, I'm going to let myself try to get clarity and discernment about some of the things that I came here to decide. And so that felt, at least for me, like a happy medium, even though I know it's probably kind of, you know, breaking the rules. In addition to this little rule I broke, I also broke some big rules. And if you want to know what those were, and you want to know what major breakthroughs I had and the wisdom I gained, then you can listen to the full episode by becoming a paid Substack subscriber. Paid subscribers get access to not only the full version of this episode, but all of my sabbatical year adventure episodes and more bonus content. If you're interested in this, the link is in the show notes. And when you become a paid Substack subscriber, you're not only supporting my work, but you're allowing this show to remain ad-free. I'm so, so grateful for your support.